So who keeps track of time these days, right? During COVID, it was a fantastic conversation. The last time we spoke to him, Simmer reached out again. Glad he did so. And Anson Carter is joining us right now on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. Good morning, Anson. Thanks for coming on.
Morning, guys. How you doing?
We're not too bad. A little cold here, Ace, to be quite honest with you. But I got to ask you first, what has it been like life in Georgia? Forget about hockey, just COVID and election style.
You know, it's actually not been that bad, to be honest with you. I check with my mom and dad every single day, and they watch CNN and Fox News to get both sides of the story all the time. And they assume that it's hectic and it's crazy down here, but it really hasn't been that bad. I think it certainly helps. The weather's nice. So I think the weather always is the ultimate factor that keeps people, you know, on their toes.
And I got to ask that because we had Alan May on from Dallas. We've had people, or I've talked to people in Florida, Ace. Again, this is the thing that is kind of said. We think, at least in relation to CNN, that the sky is falling, and it's not that same feeling living daily in beautiful old Buckhead?
No, not at all. And this was traditionally a red state, as you both probably know, a Republican state, and just flipped this year, or I believe it's going to flip this year if it's not been made official yet, to a Democratic state. So, no, the sky isn't falling down here. People are being responsible. At first, I was a little scared and nervous, only because we're the first state to open back up again. But everyone's been wearing their masks. We socially distance when we have to. We do a lot of things outdoors when we're allowed to. You know, lucky for us, the weather's nice, you know, so that certainly helps. But I think people have been pretty... They've had their wits about them, and they've kept their heads in their shoulders, and they're not buying into all the media hype, and that's the most important thing.
Okay, I've got to ask you just the open-ender here, Anson. You know, you cover the league for NBC Sports, and the simple question is, Anson, what are you hearing this week? Are we going to get any tangible news on a return to play this week, do you think?
You know, I'm hearing exactly what you guys are hearing. I mean, I have those same conversations with the commissioner and the deputy commissioner and people around the league all the time. But I really don't buy too much into them. I haven't really followed that closely. I leave that to the insiders. You know, like, even though I guess technically I am an insider, it just changes every single day. I know there's a commitment from everyone that wants to play the game of hockey, but there's so many factors involved that my job isn't really to get it first. My job is to get it right. So I'm just going to wait until the news comes out, like both of you guys. And then when it does come out, then I'll be up to comment on it. Because if not, it'll be like trying to cover the elections. You know, it changes every single day.
Yeah, no, and you're right. And we've kind of went through it. And I look at this, hey, you've got both sides trying to work together, Ace. I don't see any circumstance where you come back without fans. Owners are going to make any money. So at the end of the day for the National Hockey League, is it just important to put on some type of season, regardless of the amount of games, and at least have some forward progress to what you hope is better times?
It is, because you want to, well, the players want to play because you want to get some money in your pocket. I was part of the league when we were locked out for a full season, and that's money that you're not going to get back, ever. So I put my player hat on, and I think I want to get something. I don't care what that number is. I want to make something, earn a living. That's what you do. You've got a short shelf life as an NHL player, so you want to play as many games as you can, regardless of whatever the situation is, and you're fortunate to at least try to play some games and get some games in. It won't be perfect. It won't be ideal, but that's 2020 for you. And then I throw my owner team management hat on. I'm going to want my players to play too, because you have obligations you have to fulfill with sponsors and TV and media rights. So I think both groups have, I guess, priorities in place that you want to see both groups come to the table and play the game. And the most important thing is the fans too. I think fans want to see NHL hockey, whether there's fans in the stands or not, because ultimately we want to make sure that everybody's safe at the end of the day.
I think anybody listening can relate in this sense, that has a job, right? And let's say you've come to an agreement, like you came to an agreement months ago on return to play and the six-year CBA extension. It's like, okay, good. We're good. We got a plan forward. And now players feel like, why are the owners coming back again? And that's fine. And you talked about getting your money. A lot of it has come down to maybe some more deferred money. So players can still get it eventually, Anson, but I can understand why they're ticked right now. Do you think it's kind of a cooling off period before, you know, they can get back and maybe get to some sort of an agreement?
Yeah, I think so. I really think so. You know, the last couple of years, you've seen a lot of, I guess, I don't know if it's, you know, the buddy system. I don't know the right word I'm looking for, and you'd think I would never be a shortage of words because I'm in the media business. But the league and the PA have gotten along really well the last couple of years. And, Simmer, you know, being around the league for so long, that always hasn't been the case. But there's been labor peace amongst Don Fear and Gary Bettman, and I think there's a trust and respect between both men that they're going to get it done. But I understand how players would be frustrated. You know, you have a deal in place, and then, you know commissioner comes back and says, hey, guys, let's rip that original deal up. Let's try to redo this deal. But, once again, it's 2020. So there's nothing that you can fall back on and say, well, this is how we do business in a normal year. This isn't a normal year. So there might have been projected losses, but no one could have projected how bad they could have been. So I see where, like I said, once again, I'm a fence sitter. I'm usually not, but I totally see where both sides are coming from in this negotiation.
Yeah, I look at the deal, Lance, as being fair, and I also have said if this is a Bob Goodenhour, forget it. Also on a scale, and people know the name, has Matthew Schneider played a pretty big role in that? Because as you say, we really don't hear from Donald Fear, and suddenly these deals get done quietly. And like you said, there is a real partnership right now between the PA and the NHL.
Absolutely. You know, Schneider's involved. Everyone's involved. Don Fear is all hands on deck. You know, this isn't his first rodeo. He's been around for a long time. He helped build that very powerful Major League Baseball union, which probably is the strongest union in professional sports. And his style is to be in the background. I'll give you guys an example. When I put together my video for back in June, I believe it was, when the deaths went down in Minnesota and Minneapolis, and I reached out to Don Fear. And at first, he was like, you know what, I'm not sure if I could be a part of this video. I need to talk to my constituents first. I need to talk to my players. But he didn't really understand what I was asking him to do, if he wanted to participate. So he thought about it, and then he came back to me after like maybe 30 seconds. He said, okay, Anson, I'll do it. And I was shocked that he hesitated, but I knew that being around Major League Baseball and being around players of color his whole professional career, that Don Fear could do the right thing. And the George Floyd murder was a huge change, I think, in our society. But it's just an example of saying to me that he was thinking about his players first. He didn't want to put his name and his face out there in a video without going back and talking to his players. And that spoke volumes to who Don Fear is as a leader of the Players Association.
And Anson, that's around the same time when you joined us here on the station, and you know what happened subsequently with Blake as well, what the NBA did, what the NHL did, and here we are months later. Do you feel that, you know, enough progress has been made? Because I think I've read that some, you know, that have been stakeholders in this big time have felt that maybe there's been a little more lip service. We've seen like Evander Kane and that unit kind of pulling back from the NHL, which came out of everything months ago. How do you feel how it's come along in recent months?
I think it's been fabulous. You know, I'll never listen to anything that those guys are saying. I'm not part of that organization, so I'm not going to disparage them. I'm not going to comment on them, because you can't comment on what you don't know, right? So it's easy to be on the outside and say, this isn't happening, this isn't happening. I can tell you what, I'm the co-chair of the Players Inclusion Council, or committee, excuse me, with PK Subban, and we have some wonderful people. I mean, I know with this radio, we got tons of time, so I'll just give you a list of all the people we have on our Players Inclusion committee. We've got Kevin Shattenkirk, Blake Bolden, Mika Zibanejad, Bridget Laquette, Jamal Mayers, Kevin Weeks, Megan Duggan, Julie Chu, Al Montoya, Scotty Gomez, Sarah Nurse, Ryan Reeves, Jujar Kara, and Jacob Slavin. You know, those are individuals that are on our committee. And we have two-hour Zoom calls every other week. And that's just our committee. There's a fan inclusion committee. There's a youth inclusion committee. And this is all overseen by Executive Inclusion Council. And on that council is a man by the name of Vinny Viola. And you guys would know the Viola family owns the Florida Panthers. Well, Mr. Viola is the final person that says yes or no. He writes the checks in Florida. What would we see in Florida? Well, Brett Peterson was hired by Bill Zito. So when I hear people coming out saying nothing's happening, that's just lip service. That's just noise-making. That's clicktivism. That's what that is. You know, because my first reaction, people start making noise like that, I want to say to you, okay, what are you doing? Tell me, what exactly are you doing? So to be out there making noise, beating your chest like that. Yeah. So, yes, to answer your question, guys, sir, I'm a little long-winded.
And I get that's good.
Oh, no, it's not, Anson, and I wish I could say some of the same things. I look at, and I don't even want to, because I don't want to have you on because you're of color, what I've seen in the league, and again, you look to Chris Drury, look to Daly, look to anything that's happening. But the other neat part is, and seeing in the player development what happened with the Chicago Blackhawks yesterday, that crew that you identified yesterday, you know, it's not just about black. It's about Hispanic. It's about females. It's about including everybody versus one particular group.
That's what hockey is all about, being a part of the team. It's all about being a part of the team. Teamwork always makes a dream work. I've always believed that. And it's not just about, you know, black or African-American, African-Canadian, people of color. It's everybody's on these committees. We're all working together to make this thing work. You just can't have black players speaking out, trying to make it happen. Because forever, as a black player, I never want to stand out in the National Hockey League. I want to be a part of the team. That's what hockey, that's the fabric of hockey, being a part of the team, being one of 20, one of 22, not standing out. Your play might stand out, your personality might stand out, but as a person, as someone in the room, you want to just blend and be one of the guys. That's the best part about being a hockey player in the National Hockey League. And these committees reflect the communities that we want to represent. And that's what we want to embrace as part of hockey on a professional level and, more importantly, on an amateur level. Because you look at how hard it is to play in the National Hockey League. You've got a better chance of going business and go pro in business, than going pro as a hockey player. So why not make it more inclusive, teach these kids life lessons. The most important muscle that you learn when you play hockey is when you have to learn how to skate, and you got to fall, you got to get up. And I tell my kids all the time, you fall, you can cry all you want, but make sure you get back up again. Well, you're not going to learn how to play the game of hockey without learning that. So these are all life lessons that we can learn from playing the game of hockey. So why not diversify it and let all kids and people learn these great traits that you can apply and carry to you for the rest of your life?
I'm glad I brought that up. I wasn't aware how involved Vinny Viola was behind that as well, and it makes a lot more sense what happened recently with a new hiring in Florida. Anson Carter is joining us here on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. So here's one thing, Anson, that we're all involved in, and that's COVID here. Unfortunate news coming out of Vegas. Looks like they got an outbreak with players there. They have to close the facility through Thanksgiving weekend, and we haven't even got to a training camp yet. Give us your thoughts on how the NHL is going to navigate through this, because it's a concern for us all and all sports leagues, and this is a big element as to maybe what's holding things up as well, how they're going to deal with COVID and get to next season.
Yeah, I don't think there's any misconception out there that COVID won't be a part of the conversation. It's how you deal with it. Because I don't think it would be realistic to think that you could go a full season. Like the bubble, I mean, that was amazing, to not have one instance. So I think there would be a plan in place that if someone does come down with COVID, what's the protocol is going to be to make sure everyone else is being kept safe, and what is the plan in place to allow that player to re-enter the competition with his teammates safely after X amount of time. So I think those are the concerns that players would have. Those are the concerns I think ownership would have, too, to make sure that everybody's safe. I mean, at the end of the day, we all want to make money, but safety is the most important thing. I don't care how much money you make. I know some of the richest people in the world, but it hasn't stopped them from dying early. So safety is the most important thing. So I know we're having these conversations about return to play, but at the forefront of all these conversations with the league, with the players, I know they're thinking about everyone's safety first.
And I look at this, Anson, and I hear the scenario, 48 games of an all-Canadian division against Ottawa, playing those teams, giving me all day long. Thoughts on, I guess, back to your Vancouver days, how much fun would it have been to play in an all-Canadian division?
Oh, that'd be amazing. Yeah, a little news flash, and I've heard Berkey said it a few times there on Hockey Night in Canada that it's hard to get players to play in Canada, and it's true. I'm sorry, Canadian fans might not want to hear this, but I know when I played in the league, a lot of the game's biggest stars wanted no part of playing in Canada. And yes, taxes was a reason, but that's not the biggest reason. You're not thinking about taxes. You're playing the game. You're a lot of guys will play for free. So the taxes aren't at the forefront of the conversation. A lot of guys don't want that pressure. And I look back at my career, I should have played in Canada longer. I mean, due to the economics of my situation all the time, that wasn't the case. But I love that pressure. There was no off days. You know, guys get called up from the AHL, and the fans would know exactly who those players are. Hmm. I would change tape of my stick a certain way in practice, and I got 10 guys asking about it in the media scrum. You know, I love that pressure, that rush of being in the spotlight 24/7. A lot of guys aren't built for that.
Yeah.
Some guys like being in Columbus, where the pressure is none, in Tampa Bay, where the pressure isn't on you, in Florida, in Nashville. Even though those are great hockey markets, Tampa and Nashville, it isn't the same as playing in, say, Ottawa, when you go two games without scoring a goal. And they're asking Thomas Chabot, hey, what's going on? This is two games, you know, out of 82 games. Why haven't you scored yet? And it's unfortunate that we might come back without fans for an all-Canadian division, because for Ottawa Senators fans there and for you guys there, it would be a treat, because I know they've been struggling in attendance the last couple of years. I'm sure that might change, or would have changed, if we would have had fans attending games this season to start.
And you bring up a great point. It makes me laugh about our World Junior team and whether the kids are under too much pressure, and should you notify them by email that they're cut, or what should you end up doing? Can you, and I guess from an NFL, and I'll say the NBA doesn't seem quite the same, but from a football standpoint, in the state of Georgia, what is it like to play college football? And what could be anything better than preparing you to play in the National Football League?
It's insane. I mean, this is SEC country down here. So this is Georgia. This is Alabama. This is Auburn, Mississippi State. College sports is like playing professional sports. That's the one thing a lot of Canadians don't realize. Whether it's college hockey, you know, whether it's college baseball, basketball, football, it's like professional sports where you eat, sleep, train, to prepare for your competition. But it's very, very similar. It really is. And that pressure, you know, you mentioned World Juniors. I came from the college hockey system, and I would watch World Juniors every single year. I remember watching the Russians play with Fedorov and Bure and McGillney back in the day in Alaska, I believe it was. I remember watching Dougie Waite and Eric Lindros go head-to-head. You hear Bob McKenzie coming out with his stories every single year. Like, that's some of the things I look forward to as a kid. And then you get away from it playing college hockey. And I remember being part of selection camp, and I remember people like, who the hell is this guy? Who's Anson Carter? And they probably looked down and saw the 10th round draft pick, the Quebec. They're like, who is this guy? What's he doing in here? But the pressure was unbelievable, but it helps make you stronger. It really does. And now as I get older now, it's tough for me to watch the cameras at kids and kids' faces after they get cut. You know, at like, say, 5 o'clock in the morning, because that was the worst sleep I ever had that camp. Because you knew that knock could be coming. And I never slept that whole night, because I'm thinking potentially that could be the time I go back to campus. And I didn't want to go back to campus. I wanted to put on that red and white jersey and represent Canada. Luckily that I did, because we had the opportunity to do something that a lot of kids don't get a chance to do, and that's win a gold medal for Team Canada.
I'm so glad a few years ago they got away with that knock on the door on live TV, basically, and they let it breathe a little bit before they break the news to these kids when their heart's broken when they don't get a chance to make that team. I just want to go back to something because of where you are, and Simmer brought it up here, and just, you know, college football, when you talk about the pressure environment, I think playing, you know, Division I college football in the United States is pretty much the only team sport I can think of. Sometimes, depending on what program you're at and how big your stadium is, it's a step down to go pro in terms of focus, even, right? like it is. Like, you go to the big house and you get 100,000 people in there, and then let's say you go to Jacksonville next. That's a step down in pressure, really, right? And you want to talk about getting prepared.
You're speaking the wrong guy. You can't bring up the big house.
I know. I'm sorry, Spartan. Okay. Man, did I step in it?
We don't talk like University of Michigan. We don't have those things on. Too early for that kind of stuff, guys.
I'm sorry. Oh, no.
we had 80,000 strong. You know, and you know, that brings me back to a thought where, you know, these outdoor games are so huge to the NHL's business, and fans love them. Well, outdoor games, really, besides in, I believe it was 91, when they went outdoors in Vegas, maybe my timing's wrong, when Gretzky and the Kings went outside.
They played the Rangers.
Motion, and that was really an eye-opener for the NHL and the rest of the hockey world to see that, hey, maybe this outdoor thing could really work. And over 80,000 fans packed Spartan Stadium to watch some great outdoor hockey between Michigan State and University of Michigan.
Nobody loved Ron more than Ron. I was sitting in a meeting with him at Georgia McPhee, and he'd coached Georgia at Bowling Green. And he started talking about if he walked around Detroit that more people would recognize him than Scotty Bowman. And I was trying to look at George as to whether or not he was joking or not. And then we walked out and got a good chuckle about it. Hey,
well, you know what? Coach Mason wasn't joking, though. He was correct.
Oh, no, he was. You're right.
He was
yeah.
a legend there.
Yeah, no. Hey, you had the Michigan coach as well for a long time. Thoughts on the offseason for the Ottawa Senators on Murray, Dadonov, and the young core coming through here, which I know you know quite well.
Yeah, I think Matt Murray's the X factor. He's such a good kid, and he's won cups already. That's an experience that you could bring to the table that not many goalies in National Hockey could do. And yes, he's had a couple of down years. He's had some tough luck the last couple of years on and off the ice. But listen, he's still a hell of a goaltender. And when he finds his game, and I don't think it's a question of if, cause I think he's going to. I know he's going to. It's going to be a nice security blanket for that young Senators team, young players to go out there and just play their game. I go back to when I was in Boston. I got traded there late in 96, I believe it was, or 97. And they're tanking. We got Joe Thornton and Sergei Samsonov. And once we got Byron Defoe in net for us, that really stabilized that position. And we could go out there and play our game. But you see the toughness they're surrounding them with a guy like DeBranson, Austin Watson. That's going to give those young players some flexibility and some freedom to go out there and do what they have to do and play and not worry about guys taking runs at them. Make sure that Brady Tkachuk's not out there, you know, fighting everyone. He could go out there and play his game and establish his physical presence without having to drop the gloves and injure himself. So I like what Ottawa's doing there. It's not just about the young kids, but it's about having the veteran presence around them, because you don't want to just give young kids jobs. That's not what the NHL is all about. I know teams like to develop their players in the NHL now because of the salary cap, but I think from the standpoint of team building, you want these young players to earn their jobs, because they're going to feel like they've really connected the team, and now they're not going to be spoiled brats skating around thinking they deserve this. They're going to believe they earned it, and I think it'll make them better pros because of that.
All right, Anson, I could have used so many other examples to make my pressure point, and I picked I'm not going to say the stadium again. I'll go to the penalty box on that one. You know what? You were so comfortable speaking to you. I just had a brain fart. Please forgive me, Spartan. Please forgive me.
It's early. It's early, so I'll let you off the hook today. Don't let
it
happen again.
Thanks a lot for joining us. That was fun.
Of course. Anytime, guys.
All right, there's Anson Carter. Oh, man. Oh, that's awful. Like, why don't I get Terry O'Reilly on, and we'll talk about Larry Robinson and the Habs next. Okay. All right.
And you don't know what's funny about that. I had a kid by the name of Matty Herr. Matty played.
I remember that name.
Well, Matty, you know, actually drafted in MLB too, but he would have a Michigan golf bag when he turned pro. Like, he would not, all he would talk about is Wolverines hockey. He was like, please stop it. And I think we had Ace at the same time.